Okay, are we recording now?
Yeah, we're good.
Awesome.
We're safe.
Okay,
cool.
Hi.
Welcome to our panel, Comics is Easy with Iris and Nero. My name is Iris.
I'm Nero.
Hi.
Pleasure to meet you all. So,
good, yes, it fuels me.
So this is only an hour presentation, so we're gonna keep pretty taut. We're gonna do about 40, 45 minutes of talk, and then we're gonna do a 15-minute Q&A. Mostly it's gonna be separated into two sections. Section one is gonna be about making comics. Section two is gonna be about managing comics. So we're gonna
Which can encompass so much.
Exactly. We're gonna focus on more about doing comics as kind of a small business independent creator, seeing as that's what we both are.
Should we introduce our credentials?
Yes, we should. Do you want to start?
You go first.
Fine. I graduated from the Savannah College of Art and Design in 2011 with a Bachelor's of Fine Arts in Sequential Art, which is a fancy people name for funny books. I've self-published two books, a collection of shorter work and a graphic novel, one of which I have for display right up here. And I've made just a buttload of minis, and I'm currently working on a comic called Cross Wires, which is about queer hackers. It's really good.
It's a good webcomic.
And
I like it.
How about you?
I did not go to college. I'm entirely self-taught from the depths of Smack Jeeves. I've published a lot of stuff online. I'm currently doing a webcomic called Carnivore Planet about animal anarchists. I've published one book of my adult work. I do mostly adult stuff for adults. I used to work
adult stuff for kids.
No. No.
Not these comics.
I used to work for a pay site, and now I own my own, and it's all in there. True indie.
True indie. Hardcore. True cult.
Work.
So you can totally trust most of what we say. We're going to start with a section one, which is making comics. This can be kind of the hardest hurdle to get over, because I have a lot of people come to me at conventions or online and just say, like, I really have this great idea for a story. I have this wonderful bunch of characters and I want to turn into something, but I don't really know how to start.
You know you want to do a comic.
Yeah.
You like comics. You want to do them.
Right.
Where do you go?
How do you go from there?
Yeah.
So, like, the first and hardest part of it is kind of like working a story out from nothing. Generally, if you have stories really come in two kinds of flavors, plot-driven and character-driven. If your story is more character-driven, it's going to be more about, like, people kind of, like, really strongly developed characters kind of bouncing off of each other a lot.
Yeah.
And, like, interacting with the scenarios around them. A good example of something like this would, I mean, actually it's a bad example, but an easy to understand example would be something like Friends, the TV show, where it's not really about, like, oh yeah, well, they're fighting an alien invasion or something. It's just like, they're people and all of them have weird different personalities.
Yeah. And this is a common comic type in furry comics especially. Like,
yes.
You see the whole, like, here's my characters in high school, here's these characters in college,
right.
Which, like, even though it's a little bit overdone and made fun of, is still a valid stereotype.
Yeah, there's still a deep, deep, deep well of stuff you can do with that.
You can still do stuff with that.
And, it's, you know, it's because furry's so character-based. The other type is plot-driven, and it's more like the idea of you come up with kind of a framing scenario, and then you kind of build characters and stuff to suit it. So, like, something that would be a little bit more like maybe Star Wars, I guess, would be a good example, because the idea was, well, it's wars and stars, and there's an evil empire, and there's some little good guys, and the little good guys beat the big bad guys. And it's like, okay, well, how do we exemplify those ideas in characters?
Yeah.
So, if you want to go, like, oh, that's cool, yeah. There's really no wrong way to go about this.
Yeah.
If you just kind of, this is kind of the point where you start and you kind of ask yourself, do I want to do a story about, like, it's going to be about geopolitical intrigue in a fantasy country, or is it going to be about, like, well, I have this character and they're very like this, but what if they were like that?
Yeah. So you have your story, you know you want to do something, so
right.
How do you plan? Planning is important. You want to make sure you have everything that you want to do kind of laid out ahead of time.
Which is,
otherwise things end in disaster and comics are never finished.
Which is not to say you need to have everything like totally scripted and stuff ahead of time. That's hard and annoying. And also, comics take a long time. I'm gonna admit something to you folks. The name of this panel is actually kind of a lie. Comics aren't actually that easy.
They're easier than, say, like chemical engineering.
They're easier than making a movie.
Yeah.
Or
they
a
are,
video
though.
Game. They are. They literally are. They are. But they are tedious and they require a lot of determination.
Yeah.
Basically, making a comic, you're like, it's good, unless it's something real short, you're gonna take a long time when you make it. Like a graphic novel or something, you're gonna evolve over the course of that, and maybe you're gonna want to change elements of the story.
Yeah.
But it helps to at least have an idea of a beginning, middle, and end where you want to go.
Yeah.
One thing that I learned how to do in school that's really useful for this is creating action lists for stories. It helps to kind of start thinking about stories as like, instead of like painting a picture where you start in like one corner and just go down or whatever, however painters do things, I don't know.
Sure, yeah.
Yeah, that's how paint
works,
right?
That's how we do it.
Whatever. That's not my job. Instead, think of it like a sculpture, where you're starting with a big block of marble, and you're kind of carving inwards and refining things, and just getting closer and closer to that shape from the outside.
And not everything has to be done in a story sequential order.
Exactly. You can have like a couple scenes that you're a big fan of, and just bang those out real tight, and then put them to the side. But it's good to start with like, okay, here's part A, where it's like, it's my dude, and it's like, it's the first day of summer, and he's going to summer camp. I don't know. This is just made up. And then, like, end of the story is he comes back from summer camp, and he's a little older but a little wiser. And then, like make, like, bullet points for every single action you kind of – like loose action you want to have happen
in the story. Yeah, either bullet points or one thing that I found really useful is the, like – pretty much, you know, everybody's gone through high school, English class, the whole pyramid of events. Like, you have your beginning, your
it's
rising
exposition,
action.
Exposition, rising action, climax, falling action, denouement.
Denouement, yeah. Which is the after story.
Oh, no, I think the denouement is the falling action. Well, whatever.
No,
anyways,
that's after.
You get the idea. Yeah. Anyways, so, like,
I used that for Carnivore Planet.
Yeah, it's good to get out these basic bullet points in the most basic possible way. So, like, you know, goes to summer camp, learns how to canoe, eats some bugs,
gets really sick and has to go to the hospital, and it's really heart-touching, or whatever.
Yeah. Goes to the hospital, realizes that he wants to become a doctor. In the end, he goes back to school. But, wow, that'd be a terrible... Well, no, it could be a cool
story.
No,
that could be good.
That could be a good story.
I'm stealing that now.
Oh, crap.
Yeah.
Beat me to the punch. So once you have those real basic elements laid down, you can kind of go in detail a little bit more about, like, okay, well, what, you know, like, what's the camp like? Who does he meet there? How does he feel? And, like, kind of the last thing you can go in and kind of fill in things, and also it helps to put in, if you're working on, like, a limitation of how many pages you want to do, like, if it's just, like, a webcomic and you're just like, well, I don't know, I guess I'll just do it forever, then whatever.
Don't do that.
Don't do that.
Don't say, oh, I'll just do this forever.
Because you won't.
Have a timetable, even if it's several years.
Yes. Yeah. So, like, if it can help to kind of have an idea of a page count when you start out, and then if you have something like that, especially if it's something smaller, like 12 or 24 pages, you can go in and assign how many pages you want to give to each action, which can be really helpful.
One thing that I picked up from my previous PaySite job was the contract was I upload 10 pages a month. This actually ended up being really useful because I started working in 10-page chunks. I started working with the outline of the story and then did everything in those chunks, which is enough for, like, a short scene, the beginning of a longer scene.
You'll notice in Nero's book, all of the stories operate in pages that are powers of 10.
Pretty much, yeah.
So it's really convenient.
There's one that I think's like 13 pages, but that's because I wanted to do more.
Yeah.
So.
Bonus content.
I wanted to.
Yeah. So that's a really, and that way you can keep that structure kind of baked into the very dough of the story.
Yeah. Or your general work process.
Yeah. Dialogue I generally do last, and like with my scripting process, my dialogue can change from between when I script and when I like actually like letter it on the page, or even after that when I'm like toning it on the computer. Because
I often change dialogue from when I've sketched the page to when I'm inking, because often when I'm doing, say, thumbnails, which are smaller versions of the pages of comics, like in my sketchbook, I'll just put like real basic text, just says, I don't like you. And then I'll write that on the page and then just end up being, you know, this line sucks, let's change that.
Yeah, and then, you know, and that kind of helps keep...
Not saying that dialogue can't be the focus of
the page. No, yeah, and not saying that you're not allowed to, like, script your dialogue beforehand, because especially if you have, like, a character-driven thing, maybe you have some real juicy, juicy conversations that you want to, like, turn into a comic eventually. By all means, please write those out. But
character interaction is not what this panel's about.
Don't consider them to be, like, the end-all, be-all, and have those determine what the shape of your comic should be. It should be the actions going on in them.
One thing that's also important for, we should probably go to the next point, is
next point.
Visual language.
Yes. Showing, not telling.
Which is an important thing that a lot of people get caught up with working on comics, is making every page very, very, very ornate and beautiful to look at.
Yeah.
But then you finish maybe 5 pages in a year, or it's just not...
It's incomprehensible.
Yeah.
I've read comics like that where it's like, oh, this person had classical training as an illustrator, and it's a really lush and gorgeous piece of art. And you look at it, it's like okay, Black Seth, there's an example.
Black Seth's
like,
a good example.
Okay,
it's an example that...
Black Seth, you're not a good comic. And here's why. Like, the dude is great at illustration, but...
Gorgeous illustration.
A lot of his layouts really don't read very clearly.
Yeah.
I feel like he's not as good at maybe conveying action as I almost wish he was.
It's one important thing in comics that's part of the visual language, is making sure your actions from panel to panel are understandable to the reader without necessarily having to say, oh, this character is punching this character.
Right. And you can do this, like, and there's some things you can kind of abbreviate, like with really basic stuff, like, for example, with, like, somebody saying, oh, then he drove from, like, the store to the library, then you don't even have to, like, show that on panel. That's the cool thing about comics, is people will fill in the gaps if you show a clear enough scene transition. But other things, like little fiddly things, like, I guess, like, fight scenes, or, like, people, like, somebody doing a difficult task, you would probably need to show separate smaller shots. And generally when cartoonists do this, they put smaller panels with a lot of them on a page rather than a few big cinematic ones, just to show the ins and outs of how an activity is performed.
This is a common layout that I use
a lot
of pages, and I'll mix up the sizes of the panels a lot, but especially for pages that are introducing something, it's a really good basic way to lay out panel-to-panel actions. For example, let's have, like...
You have, like, a wide...
A night sky.
Yeah, so you have, like,
trees.
A wide establishing shot at the top. I'm describing this for our listeners at home, naturally.
And then say, like, here's, like, a car headlight on, like, a wet road.
Mm-hmm.
And then, say, a character's hands gripping the wheel. And then just sort of exhaust trailing behind.
Like, so three smaller actions that portray the act of a car being driven in the middle panels.
And then, say, having, like, a good...
Oh, you made him a furry man. Oh,
because we're in a
furry
man.
Oh, yeah, there he goes. Kitty Cat Detective Man, off on another case again.
Oh, my God.
There you go.
Black Happy.
Yeah! He's Black Glad.
So you can see, hey, here's the setting. Here's, like, we're introducing a car. There's a character in this car. Car is obviously going fast. Character is obviously in some kind of distress or something. He's very sad.
Right. Oh, no!
He's Black Satin.
Right. But then the third panel acts as that kind of, like, sort of a mirror to the first, where it establishes the subject
you're
of what we're
setting
focusing
your
on.
Action your character.
Yeah, and this also works for more active stuff, like
yeah.
I've done fight scenes in cross wires with the same panel layout where it's like establishing shot or like an establishing shot of an action, like somebody jumps on somebody else, and then three little shots of like maybe them doing a little bit of sword fighting or whatever, and then the bottom shot is like the result of that.
Let's do something like this.
Yeah, we can do like, something a little more wild there with like an inset panel and stuff.
I love inset panels.
Yeah.
Those are essentially like the timer ones.
So here's a little pro tip from the pros. Read comics that you like. Pay attention to how they lay out their panels.
Steal their secrets.
And rip them off. Totally rip them off. Yeah,
because you will like a comic for a certain reason. Figure out why you like that comic.
Yeah, what you like
Make
about...
Make work that you like.
Yeah, what you like about the rhythm of it. Oh, nice, you're drawing... Wow, this is great Crossbars fan art right here. I dig it. But yeah. And... it's also... It can also change based on... I want to add a sidebar to this, too. This also really can revolve around what canvas you're putting this on, because if you're putting it on the web, maybe you have a different page size or canvas limitation than you have in real life. Maybe you're doing the infinite canvas thing, Scott McCloud. Or maybe you're doing...
you should probably let them know what that is.
Oh, infinite canvas is just when you have, like... Okay, you know how I'm, like... It became like a thing and nobody thinks it's cool now. Like, you know how...
I like it.
I like it too. It's just something everybody sees as mundane. It's when you have like a comic page that isn't a page you could print out in real life. Like it's really long or it's really wide and it's on the internet and you're just reading it for like... And you're scrolling past it on Tumblr or whatever.
Jen Lee, Repo Ghost, do that.
Yeah, with Thunderpaw. That's a good example.
Yeah.
Thunderpaw is... Not only does it have GIFs in it, it's also like presented as all the pages are stacked in this one big column that you scroll to read rather than reading it as like pages. And you can totally do that. And you can make comics that are created specifically for that purpose. And that's cool. And you can actually... But you can... The rhythm for those... That's dope.
I like having... One thing I like is actions and tinier panels. Because it's a quick... A lot of things with... Okay. Something that's really important in comics is your timing. Which plays a lot into the panel-to-panel readability. So people will usually read larger panels as taking a longer amount of time. If you're doing something that, say, has a lot of little action-y parts, you want smaller panels for those. Obviously, you can change that, but you want to learn the general rules before you break them.
Right.
And since this is an introduction panel, usually the general... Well, I guess not rules, but more rule...
Guidelines.
Yeah, guidelines.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's a good tip. But yeah, that's cool. Also, if you're going to have characters talking in your comic, you're going to need to use these things called word balloons. Or no, you don't actually, because I guess Kyle Baker does them.
You don't
like storyboards. Most people use these things called word balloons. Do you mind if I use this?
Yeah, because then we can segue into clarity.
Yeah, clarity in integrating your words with your pictures, which is the really tricky part of comics.
It's an issue with a lot of... furry-focused comics. We're giving this panel a little bit more of a furry comics bent.
Yeah. So, basically, when you're doing word balloons, always remember that people are going to be reading it left to right, top to bottom. Unless you're creating it for specifically in a audience that maybe doesn't do that. But generally, since we're all in America... making comics in English, I'm assuming that we're going
Please have a reason if you're going to do right to left other than you think it looks cool like your mangas.
That's what I was dancing around. Yeah. So right
I hate being mean, but have a reason.
Yeah. Basically, yeah. Left to right, top to bottom. For that reason, it really helps to position, like when you're having conversations, it helps to have the character on the left speak first. And generally, this is also why when I draw actions in comics, I try to have actions going from left to right, because people are going to be reading that stuff from left to right. Although, you can bend this by having somebody somebody do an action from right to left and having the reader's eye kind of bang into that, in case you want to use that for effect. When you're doing speech balloons, it helps to kind of plan them out in like the thumbnail stages, like when you're kind of sketching out the page real tiny before you actually draw it. Just so you have an idea of where the balloons are going to go, because you want to make sure that there's enough space on the page to leave blank room for them without obscuring what's going on.
you can do your word balloons digitally, you know, in Photoshop if you're drawing yours traditionally. Like, you can do that afterwards. That's totally cool and valid and fine. Just make sure you have them integrated into the layout of your page. Don't do the Twilight manga thing where word balloons are half on a character's face and then put to 50% opacity in Photoshop so that you can kind of see the face. Please don't do that.
Yeah.
Please, God, don't do that.
And in Times New Roman.
Yeah. Oh.
Yeah. Yeah. Quick thing about lettering.
We'll get into fonts
next. We'll get into fonts next. So you're going to want to basically kind of let your reader's eye travel across kind of like in a downward sloping thing across each panel, and if you have like kind of a row of panels, it can help. Like, it would look kind of bad if you had like if you had like this dude saying this stuff up here and then like another dude saying this stuff up here, like down here, and then dude one is like up here again, because then the reader's eye has to go like this, and that's just going to lead the reader into like this weird blank space up here and not into the next panel, or not into like the bottom of here where they're going to reset to the next panel like a typewriter.
I've broken that rule before, but it's been exclusively at the bottom of a page.
That's fine.
So that your eye doesn't fall off.
Yeah, just give it, like, this is sounding really complicated, but just give a basic thought to kind of the line that your reader's eye is going to take throughout the course of a page you're working on. Just like in painting, just like in...
One thing I've done a lot is take a page into Photoshop and then, you know, get a big red brush and then just draw the line of where the focus of each panel is supposed to be and then see if it looks completely complicated and all over the place or just clean and fine. Like, usually a good is like a Z or, well, there we go.
Because back on the other side.
Or an N. Z's and N's tend to be good layouts.
Those are good, yeah.
Yeah.
When working on traditionally laid out pages.
Yeah, yeah.
We'll say that.
Yeah.
We both do, so that's what we're talking about.
I haven't had much experience with Infinite Canvas, so I will not speak it as an authority on that.
Can I talk about fonts now?
Go for it.
Okay, fonts.
Nobody talks about fonts.
Fonts.
Please, if you're doing things on a computer, which most people do.
Yeah.
Keep your font in mind.
Keep your font in mind. So,
which, if you don't know what a font is, that's like Times New Roman, Comic Sans, like the names of different...
Technically, we should be calling them typefaces, if we're going to get real.
Typeface
real.
Is a family.
Like, yeah,
Futura.
But...
That's a different panel, though. We can fight about fonts later.
We can fight about fonts all night if we wanted to. But yeah, basically... when you're doing computer lettering, which I used to do computer lettering, I did that for my last book, there's a lot of fonts available online, some for free, some cost money, that are specifically designed for comic books. And they're super, super useful because they imitate how hand lettering would look in real life. You're going to want to find one that... are you writing...
Yeah. Look at how the S is in Times New Roman. I think it's like...
It's like that.
That's good
it's
enough.
Something like that.
Anyways, you can use those or you can use other stuff. Yeah. Rule one is don't use any font with like... Don't use any font like Times New Roman.
So there's two main kinds of fonts. That's serif fonts and sans serif fonts. Serif fonts are like Times New Roman where they have essentially these little like bits.
Dingles on the end.
Yeah, there's a proper name for them and I should know because this is my job now. So
serifs?
Yeah, no, yeah, serifs.
Serifs.
I'm trying to remember if there's a more specific name for them, but I think it is just
Yeah, sure.
The thingies.
Guess we're not watching a movie at this panel. It's still about comics.
Iris.
Yeah. So yeah, try to stick to sans serif fonts because they generally read better at small sizes, which comics tend to have fonts at smaller sizes than you would find in books, just to help kind of consolidate like density of information on a page. I know there's a lot of talk in comics as to whether like it's cool to use lowercase letters, like write it like you would in a book, or whether to just use uppercase letters. Uppercase is more traditional, and the idea is that like block letters are easier to read, but I think studies have shown that reading lowercase letters is actually easier because people see shapes.
It has to do with the shape of each of the letters and how large they are.
a lot of times capitals. Yeah.
So really, if you want to go with a more traditional look, you could go with something that's a little more like all caps, and then maybe bold some words in sentences for emphasis.
In all caps, sans serif tends to be a really good choice. I think you... What did you use for Epiphany? Was it...
I used Comica Jam.
Yeah,
it was a really weird font I found on... I forget where I found it, but it was... I think it was at school. But it's like a very... It's a very... The letters are a little narrower than most comic book fonts, so I was able to kind of squeeze words in a little bit better.
Yeah.
You can also, I know some people who use like for instance, Peggy in Decrypting Rita uses like straight up like, it's like trebuchet. It's like a computer. It doesn't look like handwriting. It just looks like a straight computer font.
Yeah.
And if your comic's really like clean and modern, you can totally go for that look.
Yeah, a lot of font choice has to do with this style you're going for, like what Iris mentioned with people trying to use lowercase instead of capitals. A lot of it is mostly a stylistic choice.
Mm-hmm. Although I will say, if you're thinking about using more than three fonts on a single page, or more than three like typefaces or whatever,
it's not.
Don't do it. You're not Todd Klein. Don't try, because that looks really confusing and like garish. And it's the equivalent of like having like a flyer at work put up, and they're like, oh hey, office potluck, and then they have like every line in a different font, because they're trying to make it look fun.
Joker Man, Comic Sans.
You don't need to put a different font and speech balloon color for each of your characters' voices.
Yes.
We know that they're different characters. That's why we have the little arrows pointing to their mouths.
Yeah, like, I can get the idea behind using different fonts for different characters, but make your characters visually identifiable first.
Yes. That's more important.
Yeah.
Anyways, let's move on.
Yeah.
Because we've digressed enough about speech balloons.
I'll talk about fonts all night.
Yeah, me too. I could do a whole show about fonts, and maybe we should for a future episode.
Okay.
But, let's move on.
Sans serif, simple.
And we're
easy,
kind of covering
nice.
This because we're already at 7:30.
That's fine.
Yeah. Once you're kind of like drawing your comic.
So you've drawn a comic.
Yeah.
You did it. You did it. Good job. Awesome.
Good job. Oh, I forgot about the fonts thing. You can also learn to handwrite your own fonts, and that's cool. Moving on.
follow the same rules.
Follow the same rules.
It all applies.
Do that.
Yeah.
And also practice a lot. Practice, practice, practice. Write all of your handwriting in like comic lettering so you know how to do it better. That's what I do. It's great. Once you're finished with your comic, you're going to want to like print it somehow, put it up somewhere, whatever.
Yeah, if you're not keeping it as a webcomic, if you want to say, sell it at a convention.
And this kind of
BLFC.
This is a nice bridge into our second topic, which is managing comics. Yeah. So before you, when you, like, let's say you've like made a 24-page thing, you're like, I'm real proud of this. The next thing you want to ask yourself isn't like, how famous do I want to get off this? Or like, or even, who do I want to show this to? I think it's really got to be, how much money do I want to invest in this?
Money is important when comics.
This is something that you don't hear a lot of people talk about, but
nobody likes to talk about the money issue in comics.
But it's printed material is expensive to produce at a small scale or at a large scale. So you kind of have to work out what you're willing to sacrifice in order to make this a thing.
Yeah.
The good news is,
sometimes it's not much of a sacrifice. You can do, say, if you have a longer form comic and you want it printed, Kickstarter is great.
But we'll get to that.
Yeah.
I think that the lucky thing is we actually live in a time where it's easier than ever to publish and market stuff just because of the existence of the internet. Used to be when you had like a comic, you would like put like an ad out in like the back of like a magazine, or you take it down to your local like comic shop and be like, oh yeah, hey, please stock these, I'll sell them to you on commission or whatever. And it was really kind of like awkward and difficult to get your comics to a wide range of people. Nowadays you can get your comic to literally anybody on earth with a computer, anybody at all.
And
the nice thing is also that web hosting has gotten reasonably cheap.
One web host I recommend if you want to keep things as a webcomic is DreamHost.
Yeah.
They do extremely cheap hosting. Domain names are, if it's a .com, it's $12, and you get hosting with that. They have like a monthly plan that's just $10 a month. Mm-hmm.
I was lucky enough to get in several, like, many, many years ago, like 8 years ago, and have unlimited hosting.
Yeah, you got a real good deal right there.
Sometimes they open that up every once in a while, especially in March and October for weird reasons. So if you're someone who's going to be publishing a lot online, you want to keep an eye out for web hosts that do have those kinds of deals.
Yes, and stay away from ones that maybe aren't as good, like GoDaddy. I don't like GoDaddy. I used to have them. They suck. However, if you don't want to pay money for hosting, there's even options for that. The cheapest option for hosting a webcomic I can think of right now is sticking it on Tumblr, and there's actually themes that you can use on Tumblr to format it so that it reads like a webcomic site,
such
like with little navigation arrows and stuff.
Hot Blood, the comic about centaurs.
That's a good one. There's one that's...
I know... Lundy's Ghosts of Tiny Animals is on Tumblr.
Yeah, there's one. Yeah. That you see a lot of them on there. That's generally where a lot... Phoenix Flare, that's one that's on Tumblr.
Yeah.
And that's great, too, because you have your promotional tool built right in there. You can easily have it on there and then reblog it to your personal blog in there, or just be like, hey, check this out. And it's like, it's easy to... it's easy to turn a post into... something that can become social currency, which is cool.
But if you're printing,
things get a little more complicated.
So zines are probably what most people will be doing because books can be expensive and Kickstarters take time and energy to run.
Zines are a great place to start if you got a smaller story.
So the
allow me to show you because I brought some.
The way that we both do ours, I have some at my table too. Are essentially. We have a printer, like color printer at home. Is it laser jet?
It's inkjet.
Inkjet.
It's old school.
It's inkjet, but it's still pretty good. You can find the one that we use, which is a Brother.
You can get a
11 by 14.
Yeah, no, it's 11 by 17.
11 by 17.
You can get a newer, better version of the workstation we have, which ours is old and crappy. But you can get
good.
It's okay. It could be better. You can get a version of that online. Like, try to find one that has a 11 by 17 scanning bed and can print 11 by 17, because that means that you're going to really have no limits on the size of books you can scan and print.
Yeah.
A lot of cartoonists work at a size larger than how they print in the end, just because it's actually a lot easier to make.
We don't work at this size.
Oh, hell no. Would be dead.
Yeah.
It's a lot easier to make detail look more detailed and to make mistakes look less like
this
mistakes.
This is like how the cover is printed.
Yeah. It's like, make mistakes look less like mistakes if you shrink your comic pages down by a little bit. A lot of pros use 10 by 15 as their standard size. It's a 2 by 3 page ratio, which you'll find is pretty standard for most Western comics.
I don't use that.
Yeah, you don't use that.
I forget the ratio I use.
You use more of a manga setup, which is a 3x4 ratio.
Whatever size 8.5x11 is.
That's a 3x4 ratio.
Yeah,
so
that's what I
get. That's what Japanese and Asian comics tend to go with, and that's fine.
Yeah.
But we're going to save questions till the end, okay? Yeah. So with zines,
this cover part at home. How much do we spend on... This is just cardstock.
That's
like
just
regular... What's the weight?
Weight of that is like maybe like 92 to 110 pounds.
It's pretty... It's nice.
It's pretty decent. And then on the inside,
It doesn't bend easy. It's good.
We go to our local printing shop. Like, we usually do like Office Max or Office Depot because it's pretty easy to find 25% off coupons for there.
Yeah. Sometimes libraries will have good deals on printing.
Yeah.
So those are always good to hit up and see how much. Like, if you're just doing a very small run of stuff, you can get pages printed for like a nickel, like per double-sided page.
We go to Office Max because our productions are a little bit more elaborate. What we do is we go there with PDF files that we lay out beforehand. In InDesign, Adobe InDesign, which is a really useful program you can use that designs in it.
Yeah.
It's like it used to lay out magazines and stuff.
The only version of InDesign that you can get now that isn't torrented is essentially the Creative Cloud, which is actually worth it.
It's super nice.
They have a 30-day like trial if you want to try it out, and it's the full program. So you can, like, if you just want to lay out your first
comic,
you can just download that and it works.
And then you know, go hog wild.
Yeah.
But yeah, we take that in there.
Which there's a lot of YouTube channels on how to learn InDesign, which I'm a visual learner, so I always watch videos.
Yeah. We get them to print out, you know, 10 or so copies of that zine.
Make sure it's double-sided. Make sure they know that.
And make sure it's landscape-oriented. Like, have them print out one copy and then fold together like a book at the print shop to make sure that it reads well.
Yeah.
I've met so many print shop employees who do not get this as a concept. It's important to, like, make sure it works.
You'll have your double-sided pages. You'll get, like, a stack of them.
Mm-hmm.
And your middle will be where it folds in the middle. I mean,
yeah. Then you can take them home.
You want to make sure your PDF is in even numbers so that you can do that.
Yeah, that's important. Make sure your pages are even numbered.
Keep it in even numbers.
Yeah. Then you can take them home and staple them together. Basically, what we use for that is you can get long staplers in any Office Depot or Staples or whatever, and they're like basically just like a stapler with like a big giant metal thing on the back.
Yeah.
And that allows you to like staple even larger pages. So since we're stapling from in the middle of the comic book, it reaches all the way over here. We use these other staplers.
Lay the cover down, lay the pages down, find your middle, and then just like...
You can also get these little staplers from Japan that have the heads that swivel. We use those.
If you go onto Amazon and like search on their, like, I think it's just swivel head stapler.
Yeah.
They're the only... issue with those is usually they require a specific kind of staples because they're small.
Usually they're itty bitty, so they're you can't do anything too big.
So you'll have to buy those as well. But the one that I have that's lasted me for quite a few years, I got for $10, and the staples were $3.
Yeah,
and I still have those staples.
I got mine for $1.50 from Daiso. What's up?
Yeah, if you live on the West Coast, Daiso's like...
Surely we don't need to tell you what a blessing Daiso is.
It's essentially a Japanese dollar store.
It's great. We love it. We use it for everything.
I know they sell online, too.
Yeah,
so
that's
where you can find stuff in their stationery section on their website.
Yeah. That's actually where I get my pens, too, which, by the way, we promised in the program we'd tell you which pens we used, and
now we
are. I use a Zebra lettering pen, extra fine size, which you can find at any respectable Daiso store or on JetPens.com.
Yeah.
But these little blue pens with little gold writing on them. They're super great. They're kind of like felt-tip pens with hard yet flexible tips.
Yeah.
So they're great for varying lines, but also getting a nice crisp look out of them. You don't get with other felt-tip pens.
I use Sharpies.
Nero uses straight-up Sharpies.
I am a comics professional, and I use Sharpies. Why? Because they're inexpensive, and they get... the nice deadline that people usually compliment me for.
We use...
They're the Sharpie pen extra fine.
Extra fines.
With the little metal nib.
And then for filling in spot blacks, we will use, like, generic crap black markers.
Because everything is getting scanned and then printed.
Yeah, you don't need to do archival safe. You're not going to be, like... Bernie Wrightson selling off your originals in 40 years.
You don't
like,
you don't need to.
Yeah, you can just scan
it's
it.
Fine.
It's fine. You're good.
Paper is heavy. Trust me, I used to keep everything and just get these huge bins. Like, it's heavy.
No,
it's
yeah.
It's not worth it. Scan it, put it on, like, a nice external, like, solid-state hard drive or just upload it to the cloud.
Yeah. So, yeah.
Technology is your friend.
Anyways, once you staple your zines, you can sell them at places and then make money off of them, which is pretty cool.
Yeah, that's cool.
And once you get that, that's a little taste of, like, the printed self-publishing world. And it's like, ooh, yeah, this is great. I made a thing, and now it's in my hands.
Two tiny, tiny, tiny quick digressions on selling your work. Don't undervalue yourself.
Yeah.
And don't tell people your work is crap.
Yeah.
If you say, oh... I did this zine, it sucks, but you can look at it anyway. I will walk away.
Yeah.
I'll just leave.
Because
if it sucks,
then
I don't want to look at it. Just say, hey, I made this. If you have the time, maybe take a look at it. Tell me what you think.
I go further than that. I'm like, I made this. It's cool. You should check it out. Absolutely.
Yeah. Like your work. Because if you're, like...
I'm sure many
like
of you
the things you draw.
I'm sure many of you have heard our spiels going past our tables repeatedly at the con.
Yeah.
It's important to be positive about your work. And also about undervaluing, that's also important in a concrete sense because you want to make sure that you're selling your unit for more than you paid to make it.
Keep track of how much you spend on printing, even if it seems scary, like you're spending $20 on paper and like you get to the end and it's like you've spent $300 on getting something printed or whatever.
Right. Just make sure that you're selling
keep
them
track
so that,
of it.
Yeah.
Write it off on your taxes.
Yeah. Write them off. It's all tax deductible. just make sure that if you pay $300 to print something, make sure that you earn at least $301. Yeah. Ideally,
if you didn't, try and figure out why. Is it because it's your first show? Is it because you're selling comics about humans at a furry con? Is it because you're selling comics about furries at a small press expo? I don't know.
Whoa.
Like, audience is definitely something to consider. Maybe it's the wrong show for you.
Yeah. I remember that when I was younger, I used to do a lot of Indian small press shows. And it was always really hard for me to make money there because you would see people make these mini comics with these beautiful illustrations and wonderful, like, packaging and presentation and very, like, you know, hand silkscreen covers, and I made this paper myself.
They're operating at a loss.
They're operating at an immense loss. They're, like, selling these comics for, like, you know, it's $2 because that's just, like, the zine culture.
You deserve to make money on your work.
Fuck zine culture if it means you're not earning enough for your hard work. Make sure you price it at a decent point. I do $10 for these three packs, and that's because it's 72 pages of comics that I busted my butt on.
Yeah.
And they're not cheap to print either. Like, I think the price per unit for these, I think I worked out to be maybe like $4.
That's about how mine are.
About $4. So I'm making $6 worth of profit, which is pretty good.
Yeah.
But that usually just goes all back into printing the next run or whatever.
Yeah. Yeah.
Eventually, though, you may want to swim with bigger fish and print a book. And that's where things get hairy, because printing a book is really hard. It's essentially
the same process as zines, where most printers accept PDFs, so assembling things into PDF form.
You can do a lot of different ways to do this. A lot of people do print on demand, and I've seen some people do some really cool stuff with that. And it's useful if you only have, like, I need maybe about like 10 to 20 copies to bring to a show.
Make sure you're aware of their quality and make sure it's consistent.
Yes, that's the biggest caveat I'd have for that, because I've had people complain about consistency with print-on-demand products.
Print Ninja is one I hear people use a lot, but their printing isn't very consistent.
Yeah, yeah. I hear people I've seen a lot of professionals use Kablam a lot.
That's
kind of a standard.
Kablam used to be bad, but they've
gotten much better now, yeah. They're real good.
Yeah.
Another option is to, what I did for Epiphany was printing in bulk, which is to go actually through a book printer.
Yeah, and which this circles back to Kickstarter or crowdfunding. You can take pre-orders.
It's a lot more expensive to do it that way. And also you need to think about where you're going to store the books after they're done, how you're going to sell them.
I would say only do this if you know you can make a consistent profit at the shows that you're regularly going.
Yes. You know? If you're just doing it for like a lark and you don't know if you're ever going to sell off these 100 copies of your Magnum Space Opera Opus, maybe hold off a little bit for now.
Run it as a webcomic first.
Yes, to get that fan base built up.
Yeah, that's why webcomics are great.
People underestimate the idea of giving a thing away for free and then selling it to them again later.
I feel like that segues a lot into management.
Yes.
Especially, which that is something that a lot of people don't take into consideration, especially with crowdfunding and webcomics and just being a comics professional in general. Social media is your best friend, even if you hate using it.
Yeah.
I hate using Tumblr just because I don't have a lot of time in the day.
It's
a time sink if you let me just sit on it all day.
It's designed to be a time sink.
No,
that's all it does is to sink your time.
Yeah, but you want... If you're regularly producing work, you want to have a Twitter, a Tumblr.
If you have a lot of people, like, I mean, I don't like Facebook because all of the people who watch me on Facebook are like my relatives or weird friends from like high school.
Yeah.
But I've known other people who have a really rockin' like Facebook following, and if that's your avenue, if people who use Facebook are the kind of people you think would like work with your comic, go for that.
Yeah.
I know a lot of people who promote their comic through Instagram.
Yeah,
I haven't yet seen a lot of people who promote their comic through Vine, but I want to try that.
Good. The three main social media presences that I see are Twitter, Tumblr, and then your website.
Yeah.
Please have a website if you're going to be going full-time with this.
Have your own website.
Don't have a Tumblr if it's not separated from, say, like, this is my, like, goof-off, like, dumb Star Wars jokes Tumblr, and then this is my art.
Yeah, that's cool.
I've been handed business cards by people at both furry and, like, professional conventions where their link is a Tumblr link, and it's just jokes and like hey, not their work.
Captain America, super cool movie, right?
Yeah.
And it's like, yo, I want to look at your
artwork. I want to see your comics.
Yeah, I want to see your stuff.
You need to cure... I'm going to sound like such a yuppie. Curate your web presence. Curate your brand. Make sure you have things that people know you for, either stylistic quirks or things that you like to be associated with. People tweet pictures of chickens and chickens-related things at me. That's right. My brand.
People send me stuff about old computers, and I love it. Not just because I love stuff about old computers.
But because you like it, yeah.
But because it's also what I write about, and yeah. That's important.
Yeah. I love birds.
No, yeah. You don't have to become, like, a cardboard fakey-fake person.
Yeah.
You can just kind of make it extensions of your own interests and turn that into a professional sort of look.
Yeah.
But yeah, it helps to have your own website.
Yeah. Website, Twitter, Tumblr.
Yes. Post consistently.
Yes.
It really helps more. Like, there's... You can post... If you have a webcomic, you can post it in a lot of different update schedules. There used to be this whole notion back in, like, the early 2000s of if you miss... one day on your comic, if you miss one single goddamn day, all of your readers are going to desert you,
they're going
to spit on your grave, and you're never going to work in this town again. That's not actually true.
I update my webcomic monthly.
Yeah, you do 10 pages once a month.
Yeah.
And like I do twice a week, which is real frequent, but sometimes I miss updates. Like I missed one yesterday because I was driving 14 hours, and I can't do Photoshop and drive at the same time. Yeah.
But be honest on your, say, Twitter. Yeah. Say, hey, folks, I know you're waiting for the next page, but I'm driving to this convention. If you all wait till Monday, that'd be super cool.
And that's cool because, like, if you're being real about it as often as you are actually posting stuff, then you seem human, and that's cool.
Yeah.
Don't do the thing where you're like, oh, yeah, I'm going...
Don't lie.
Yeah. I have typhoid.
Yeah. Don't... spend time on posting a update page that's just, oops, I missed.
Yeah.
Don't and then spend, with, like, hey, a sad picture of your persona.
Here's the thing that I haven't seen in a while, but I wonder if people still do it. Don't spend time drawing an image to say, oops, I don't have an update for
people
today.
People do
when
that,
you could have actually drawn a page for the update.
Yeah.
Like, what's the point?
Yeah. People
just do it. Nike.
People do that, but it's like, I don't get
it. Yeah.
Yes, it's an important part of managing what people know you for. And you don't want people knowing you for, oh, this person posted another, oh, I missed an update page again. Cool.
Yeah. Speaking of that, another good thing for people to know you for is you, because you are also part of your brand presence.
Yeah.
It
sounds contradictory to say... have a brand but also be genuine.
Be yourself.
But it's just, again, carefully curate what your output is.
The thing about comics is all industries are, but it even more transparently, it's an industry based on informal connections.
Yeah.
So
that's a reason to our last.
Exactly. Yeah. You're not going to necessarily, like, the days of when you could, like, line up at a convention and show your portfolio to an editor, and the editor would be like, oh, this is the one we've been waiting for. Time to put you on Superman. That kind of thing doesn't happen anymore. Editors are more looking out for people who can self-manage and can self-market. Yeah.
Which is why managing is so important.
Right. And people who are well-known in among their peers.
Yeah.
It really helps to be a nice... person. And I wish that sounded fancier than it does.
You would think that this would be obvious advice, but be nice.
Be if you can't be nice, be polite.
Yeah.
Nobody, like, I won't say nobody ever got famous for being a shitball, but are we not supposed to cuss at this panel?
I cuss.
Oh, oops. Sorry. If there's any kids in the audience, don't say shitball.
Don't say that.
It's a curse.
It's a meme.
People have gotten famous for being grossos.
But yeah, but then that's what they're known for.
That's what they're known for.
Being a jerk.
Just be friendly to people.
You don't have to be nice to every, like, scary person that comes up to your table.
You can be you can have self-preservation and stuff. But
say even if you don't like, oh, I don't like this editor because the way he did this anthology sucked and I don't agree with it.
No, yeah.
Don't say that. to that editor.
Don't say
or,
that. Or
like,
don't tweet it and be like, yo, this sucks and here's why. And it's like, oh,
Did you know on Twitter, Twitter and Tumblr, things are searchable without hashtags. So if you mention someone's name, it will still come up in a search.
Yeah, they'll see you. So if I tomorrow I was like, oh yeah, what's a cartoonist I really like? Jeff Smith. Nobody could ever say a mean thing about Jeff Smith in the world. If I said tomorrow, like, Jeff Smith was a jerk to me, I hope that his comics all fail, and I hope he falls in a well. Then, like, he can totally see that, and he can totally reply to
that.
Even
if you have a legitimate reason for it, you can still hurt people's feelings.
Yes. So, like, I mean, you know, don't be, like, rude or like anger, cultivate a personality like that.
If you're going to have sass, make sure you have a very, very well established reason for it, such as this person is a massive sexist.
Yeah, or this person totally cheated a whole bunch of other people out of money.
Yeah.
In which case, hey, that's legit.
Yeah.
But even then, I think I would hold off of like just talking about that openly all the time on my public Twitter account or whatever.
I personally would not mention that person's name.
No,
I would say, hey, I worked for this one thing one time and it sucked. Hey, guys, remember to get paid.
Yeah. which I guess is kind of like subtweeting, which is maybe one of the worst activities in existence. But in this case, it's useful.
Don't just say, oh, sometimes I hate it when people do this thing. I sure hope nobody I know does this thing.
Winky face. Kitty winky face.
Yeah. Don't do that.
But yeah, just be nice. And also this extends to conventions. I've been to a lot of conventions where, like Heroes Con 2012, I remember that like...
That's in North Carolina,
North Carolina,
right?
Charlotte. So like, I'm there showing off my work, and it was so surreal because after the con, everybody would pile into the hotel bar because it was a convention connected to a hotel. And basically, it was this, like, weird demolition derby where it was all these comic, like, D-listers, like, buying expensive drinks and then jamming them into the hands of editors and famous A-list cartoonists.
This is a big thing.
While trying to get them to look at their portfolios and, like, comics and stuff.
Yeah.
And, like, yeah, man, you're my friend now. Yeah. You should totally look at my comics. This rules, right? Don't do that.
I've seen people... I forgot if I told you about this. Emerald City Comic Con this year, I stumbled upon one guy trying to give an elevator pitch of his, like, Spider-Man, like, fan comic to, like, somebody that I guess was an editor in the bathroom.
Holy...
While they were both peeing.
That's a really bold move.
Yeah.
That's a bold
Don't
and
do
dynamic
that.
Tactic.
Don't do that.
That you should not do.
If you want to make connections with people... Like their work, say hi to them.
Yeah.
Don't try to make connections with people that you just want to, like, exploit. Like, actually be a friend to people.
Yeah, and that's the other thing. Like, it also helps to be friends with people who maybe aren't like, you know, I'm going to be famous, so I'm going to make friends with, you know, freaking...
Gerard Way.
Don't
tweet at Gerard Way.
That's definitely a doable thing that can happen.
Yeah.
It helps to find other people you whose work you enjoy, whose practices you admire, who you would like to connect with in, you know, your own kind of circle of peers and stuff.
Be a friend. But this isn't a panel on how to make friends.
No.
But
be friends with other people. Also, like, don't be competitive with those people because in school, a lot of the attitude was, oh man, I'm in like a tank of sharks right now.
Yeah.
I got to be the top shark in the shark tank. You don't have to do that. Sharks can like cooperate with each other. It's fine. We're all hungry.
Even if someone that whose work you don't like gets into an anthology that you wanted to be in, you don't have to like go out and kill them.
You don't have to be like, I obviously hate them now because they're better than me. It's like, oh yeah, they landed that. Dope on them. Cool. Yeah. Killer.
Find out why.
Yeah, find out why and
try
to emulate their practices.
Yeah.
And steal their face.
Yeah. Steal their Twitter account.
Okay.
All right.
I think that's about as much time as we can talk.
That's pretty much everything I have under managing.
Yeah, let's go to a quick Q&A since I think we're... Oh, it's 7:56. We'll do a quick Q&A until they kick us out.
Yeah.
Okay, so who
we'll
has any questions?
What do we got?
Right over here in the orange.
Is this orange?
Looks orange. Vermilion, whatever.
Looks red.
Oh, congratulations.
Hi, I do paintings which are kind of different from comics because it's just like one picture and not many.
Nah.
So, if I was going to, say, Emerald City Comic Con and I try to get people interested in reading through a book, that seems like it would be a completely different experience than looking at a print.
Mm-hmm.
How do you bridge that difference beyond just saying, Nero said, I appreciate mm-hmm. you take time to look at this.
Mm-hmm.
Like, is there like an easier segue into look at all these pages?
Right. If you're going up to a booth of someone that you like and you want them to look at your work, have a starting point. For example, if you want to talk to an editor for, say, like Random House or something, say, hey, I saw you worked on this book that is, say, a like artist monograph, like it's all illustrations, and you, the editor, helped typeset this, and it's somewhat similar to my work. Would you like to take a look at mine as well?
Yeah. That plus... if you're bringing a portfolio, make sure it's very well curated and make sure it's like pretty brief. Keep it to the very best stuff.
What's the good number? It's like 12 to 16,
like,
right?
No, it's 10 to 12.
10 to 12.
It's real low.
Yeah, 10 to 12.
Like, speaking from experience, I've tried to do the portfolio thing where it's like, oh, I'm just going to put in all my good
work.
Don't
do that.
It's going to have 5,000 pieces in it, and I'm sure they'll be wow. I buy the huge volume of good work.
I was applying to like a million places with like my giant portfolio, and then I did a giant trim, curated everything very carefully, and then I got a job that I'm
like,
starting on the 17th. So.
Immediately. So, yeah.
And then... Thank you. And it's totally okay to have multiple portfolios. Like,
yes.
You can have one that is your comics portfolio, one that is your best paintings portfolio, one that is your book illustration portfolio. You can have several.
That helps. Specialize. Any other questions? We're going to go to this one over here. We'll get to you next.
In a layout situation, how often do you really want to use things like splash pages? Like, can you overuse the splash page?
Hey, that's a great question. I've seen books that are nothing but splash pages. Like, what, I mean, I guess you could call it splash pages, as in there is one image per page. And it still counts as a comic because it's still images read in an order to express the passage of time.
What was the lithograph comic that was in the Scott McCloud book with the guy with the demon wings that was just...
That was Max Ernst.
Max Ernst,
his collage
yeah.
work from like the early 1900s.
Yeah.
That was kind of a proto-comic.
Yeah.
Really cool stuff. Check it out. But honestly, if it's like a regular comic book comic, I kind of tend to, like...
It really depends on your pacing.
Yeah. Splash pages are a good, like, exclamation point for, like, a big, like, oh, watch out! So, like, in traditional superhero comics, they started as kind of a way to, like, either, like, open up a chapter and be like, you know, in this chapter a planet explodes, watch out! Or, like, near the end where it was like, oh, man... Batman's son the whole time was his dad also. Watch out! But then in like the 80s and 90s, there got to be the practice of artists selling original pieces for profit, so you got to see a lot more of splash pages being used
yeah.
in comics. It was like, oh man, Wolverine's getting milk out of the fridge. Watch out!
Yeah.
I inked this for 20 hours. You better pay me $500 for it.
I would say, like, they can definitely be overused, but make sure, like, if you're going to use them, and if you know you're going to be using them a lot, definitely have a reason for it, either pacing
yeah.
or story-wise.
And, like, you can be a little more economical and not necessarily need them.
Like, I know a lot of people will use them for, say, big environment shots. Like, oh, here's this big, gorgeous city. Think about maybe if you think you're using them too often, think about maybe if there's a way you can switch that up first before using it
yeah.
again.
Comics is all about letting people's imaginations do the heavy lifting. So you can get away with
yeah.
like
my
I don't want to say cutting corners, but I mean...
My cheat code tends to be I wait 25 pages before trying to reuse a similar layout to something that I've already used.
That's good advice.
Yeah.
Okay.
I do that in Carnival Planet a lot.
Any other questions? Yeah, you had one?
I've already answered it, but I was
going to
ask if you had any tips for, like, pacing.
Oh, yeah. Depends on the story, really. And on the length of the item that you're doing. So, like, if you're going to do, like...
Do you have a specific story in mind, or...
Okay. If
just
it's...
in general.
Yeah. So if it's... if
well, again, like, the whole... Smaller panels tend to be quicker, smaller
yeah.
moments, and larger panels tend to be longer.
And also, like, if you're doing a story that has a lot of, like, for instance, action, whether it's physical, as in dudes punching other meaty dudes, or maybe a little bit more like psychological, like a horror comic, or like maybe like political, like it's, I don't know, some sort of like Bridge of Spies adaptation or something, then you can do stuff that's a little more quicker paced and snappier. Comedy's good for that too, because like,
yeah,
it's something that you want to be like delivered to people.
Yeah.
But if it's something that's a little bit more dramatic or a little bit quieter, like sort of a drama or a slice of life, you can take your time and kind of stretch it out a little bit more and let
two different comic artists that might be good different examples of how you can stretch pacing are Jack Kirby.
Yeah.
Because he used to do those like giant like splash pages that had
right.
so much.
But his comics never felt like they were like slow or anything.
Yeah.
And they were always very kinetic.
Oh gosh, I forget the name of the comic she did. Inio Asano?
Inio Asano, yeah. Solanin was a big one. What a Wonderful World.
Goodnight Poon Poon?
Oyasumi Poon Poon.
Yeah. She handles pacing very, very well.
Yeah, because her comics are a lot quieter, so
yeah.
She generally kind of slows a lot of things down and focuses on little details of the environment or like
yeah.
small actions and stuff.
So she also uses splash pages like a lot.
Yes. But in an entirely different way than Jack Kirby does.
Yeah. So those might be two good jumping off points.
Yes. Check them out.
Yeah.
Okay. Any other questions? Yes. You in the green. No, the blue. You.
I'm having trouble with colors today.
So whatever.
So if you've got a long form comic that you've been working on for years, you've improved a lot in terms of talent over that time. How
mm-hmm.
do you introduce new readers to it, knowing that they'll have to go back and look at the rough early stuff?
That's a really good question pertaining to webcomics. Holy crap.
One thing that I've seen people do is either they redo their beginning chapter and, say, have a little button on the sidebar that says, hey, new readers, click here, and then explain, hey, first chapter's kind of rough, maybe start here for your beginning reading experience. If you want to see the old art, start here.
Yeah, which is important. Like, that's I've seen that in some webcomics where there's, like, after, like, a couple years or so, they have kind of a soft reboot sort of thing.
Yeah.
Where the story kind of zooms out, and it's like, okay, here's essentially, like, another chapter in the story, but we kind of, in it, we kind of get a little bit of backstory and a little bit of, like, what each of these characters are about. And
yeah.
if you can pick it up from that chapter onward and not feel like you're missing anything, then that's great.
Yeah.
Inevitably, if you're working on something like, for instance, I couldn't do that with Epiphany because it's like a graphic novel. It's like one chunk, and I had to work on it in bits and pieces because of school.
Yeah.
With this, I basically kind of locked down a very restrictive visual style for the comic. It's
figured
all,
out what worked
yeah,
with the earlier pages.
Yeah, it's all in brown and yellow. It all has a very limited type of, like, there's only about like maybe four or five different types of panel layouts I use in it.
So it's not super jarring when you're going from
yeah.
like, say, you're looking at like one of the last pages in the book and then looking at the first.
So that can help if you have a sort of an idea, like if you just stick to sort of a style that you start
yeah.
out with.
It's much harder to go from, say, colored pencil and pen to
yeah.
Painting in paint tool size.
Which, hey, speaking of colored pencil, that's a great example. We have a friend called Sid
oh,
Icarus,
yeah.
who does a comic called Inhuman. That's a
yeah.
fantastic comic that's been running for
theirs
2 years.
Is exactly that, where
yeah.
they started using Sharpie
and colored pencil. And they just locked that style
yeah.
in, and all of their development, and they do beautiful art, but all of it's done using those tools and
yeah.
in that same style. So it doesn't look really disingenuous with how the comic started.
It's also a really good example of using traditional art, but also digital
lettering.
Fonts. Yeah, lettering and speech balloons.
It's also a terrific comic.
Yeah, it's a good comic.
Any other questions? Bing bong. Nobody. Nobody. All right, well, you know
That's
what?
Fine.
It's 8:06, and we probably need to draw this to a close. We want to thank you for making this, for coming to our panel.
I didn't expect this many people.
Yeah, if you have any other questions that you didn't want to say out loud or whatever, you want to show us your stuff or whatever,
yeah.
We have little business cards up front. You take them, hit us up on social media or our emails or whatever.
Yeah.
By the way, Spend a little extra money, get a nice business card.
Yeah, those business cards are important. Please, for the love of God, get business cards.
Yeah. Thank you very much.
I'm clapping for me.
Have a good rest of the con. Episode over. Can we stop recording now?
Yeah, here. I got it.
Okay.
Yay, that was really good.
Yay!
Yeah, I wish you could have. We didn't cover like half of what we wanted to.
Tell me where you got this from. Why? Because it's mine, not mine. I missed it so long.